Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
And we are lucky enough to be joined by Executive Vice President and General Manager Howie Roseman, someone who handles pressure very well. Howie, how's it going today?
How we doing, guys?
Doing great, Howie. How are you feeling, man? It's been a busy offseason for you, coming off the draft. Just a quick overview. I know you've talked about the draft and the draft picks this past weekend. But for us, just your thoughts on what you guys were able to address, and whether or not you feel good about coming out of the draft, addressing some of the things you felt you wanted to get addressed in this draft.
Yeah, the draft, you're competing with 31 other teams, so it's never going to be perfect. You know, you're always going to lose players that you wanted to draft because you're subject to what everyone else does. And in terms of how you're feeling, you know, I'm feeling like we got to get these guys in here and develop them. You know, that's the most important thing, what they do now. However good we felt after the draft ended, none of it matters. All that matters is how they go play. And so that's where we're at right now. That doesn't mean we're not excited about the potential of these guys. But right now, you know, Ike, that's what it is. It's potential. And they got to turn that into production.
You often talk about how the offseason is always evolving, right? It's not just free agency. It's not just a draft. It's different waves of this thing. As you guys get prepared for your rookie mini camps and your OTAs, I know you guys still keep your eye open for what's happening around the league and what may become available. But when you look at the young guys you got on your roster, particularly on the defensive side of the football, you feel good about going into these early camps and getting a chance to see if these guys can be able to possibly grab a starting position when you look at some of those key spots on the defensive side?
Yeah, you know, I think really fortunate that we don't have a lot of open spots on our football team, and that's a great credit to the players that we have in here. Really got a young defensive football team, with a lot of players who played championship caliber football. So that's exciting. You know, you're not worried about going into a season and worried about pressure moments with these guys, because a lot of these guys have won world championships. A lot of the guys that we've brought in here have kind of championship pedigree. And so that makes you excited that it won't be too big. And then, you know, I know from my perspective and hopefully our fans' perspective, knowing that, you know, we have two guys on our defense who are older than 25 years old. You know, that is unbelievable. That's really exciting. And you know, I'm biased, but I do think it's not just because they're young, but they're good players. So we look forward to that. I think we added a lot of competition. I think we're fast on defense. I think we got a heck of a defense coordinator, and You know, all that being said, that's how it looks on paper. We got to put it together. We got to work really hard. We got to be prepared to defend our championship starting with that Thursday night game at Lincoln Financial Field.
Howie, I know the draft class is still new, but I guess if you had to describe this class in what word would you use to describe them?
Yeah, I think that's unfair. I probably could go through each player and give you a one-word description of each player, but, you know, I'd hate to generalize, you know, our whole class based on one word, because they're different players. They're different flavors, you know. Everyone we got, they're different positions, and they all have different strengths, you know, and that's how I kind of look at it. Like, you know, what are the things that these guys can do really well? And then there's a bunch of areas that we got to develop because, you know, we forget these guys are 21, 22, 23 years old. Changing cities, coming into a different profession with grown men, performing for their family. So we got to develop them as well. And I think that's the exciting part. I think we have the right people to do that. And I think these guys have the tools in their body and the right mentality to want to be developed, which is a big part of development.
You guys certainly replenish talent, Howie, in a lot of different areas. We talked about on the defensive side of the ball, even added depth. Late in the draft with the offensive line, which you guys typically do as far as getting guys developed. I was a little surprised the tight end position wasn't necessarily addressed in the draft kind of early based on some of the things that we've heard about what could potentially happen. So I won't beat around the bush with you. Dallas Goedert is a big question mark for a lot of the fans wanting to know what his future is going to be like being here. Are you guys any further along as far as deciding what that's going to look like as far as him being here or not moving forward?
Yeah, I think you get into trouble when you just go into a draft and say, I got to get a position. You know, I've done that before and it never works out really well. So you really want to be consistent with what you have on the draft board. And every time we were picking, a guy stood out, you know, that it was higher graded than where our selection was. At times that we had multiple guys like that, we just moved back, you know, and picked up more picks because, you know, the more picks you have, the more chance you hit on them. And you talked about the offensive line. You know, we typically would like to go into a draft and take offensive linemen higher. We didn't do that. But when we got to the third day, we saw guys that we thought had real potential, and that's what they are right now, potential, because of the tools in their body and what we saw on film. And so we took not only one guy, not only two guys, but we also had another guy in free agency after the draft that we liked. So, you know, I think, and that just increases and hitting on your odds that you're not just putting one guy in a basket and hoping that guy hits. In terms of the tight end position and Dallas, I would say this, you know, it's I'm looking at my phone, so it'll take me a second. It's Thursday, May 1st. It's freaking May 1st. It's May 1st. I promise you one thing. We are not going to stand pat between now and when we play on Thursday Night Football. And I think that includes all positions. So I'm going to give you an answer without giving you an answer, and you're going to have to read it from there.
Sounds great. Now, one guy that Eagles fans are excited about is Jahad Campbell. And I got two questions for you on Jahad. First, do you view him more as an edge that can play linebacker or a linebacker that can play edge?
You know, right before I got on this call, they said Jahad was outside my office. He wanted to come say hello. We are going to love this player and this person in Philadelphia. I couldn't be more excited that we were able to get him in this draft last week. And when you ask that question, I'd say yes.
Of course. And, you know, obviously the only reason it seems like he was there was because of shoulder and knee concerns. I know you won't get into detail about the injuries, but I guess what would you say to Eagles fans who are concerned about some multiple injuries happening here with Jahad Campbell?
Yeah, I mean, a huge part about playing in the NFL is being durable and being able to play a lot of games. That's a huge part of what we look at when we're drafting guys. There's no chance that if he wasn't coming off of off-season shoulder surgery that he would have been within a distance for us to go get because he's that talented of a guy. I think that over the last couple of years, our medical staff has proven their success with guys. That doesn't mean that we're going to be perfect, but we were very confident even when we thought he was just a top 10 player in the draft and we wouldn't come close to him about how he would be. I don't even want to say long-term because I think of this player playing for us 3, 5, 7 years from now, which we're all confident here that he'll do, but even in the short term. You know, I think for our fans, this is what I would say. I'd say in a situation, and I'm not saying this is apples to apples, but last year we drafted Coop in the second round. Coop didn't play to the week of our last preseason game. I mean, it's hard to remember, but he didn't start until week six, which was really our fifth game. How did that work out? You know, and so I think we can be a little patient here and make sure that this guy is right. And because that's what we're going to do, we're going to make sure he's right, that we are going to have a heck of a player for the Philadelphia Eagles for a long time.
Yeah, and you got it. Everybody's pretty much excited about him, local kid. So that certainly is someone that we're all looking forward to rooting for. Howie, you mentioned earlier about the youth on that side of the football, the defensive side of the football. And yesterday, you guys picked up the fifth-year option for Jordan Davis. Jordan certainly finished off the season much stronger than he started the season. First question on that with him. The decision to pick up that fifth-year option, why did you guys do it? And then secondly, his development, watching him develop through the first 3.5 years of his career going into his fourth season, how has that been going according to your evaluation, and where do you guys expect him to be moving forward?
Well, like, I think if I answer the second part, the first part's going to be easy.
Okay.
When you watch Jordan and how he looked the second half of the season, and that's a big part of it, how he looked.
Mm-hmm.
He was in great physical condition and shape. He was disruptive during the playoff run. We forget, again, like, players still develop. You know, when you look at the history of defensive tackles in the National Football League, you see a lot of really successful guys that people forget took to year 3 and 4 to really hit their stride. And we think he is just hitting his stride. This guy is going to play really good football for us here. He's an unbelievable person, worker, leader, and I think the sky's the limit for him. I think that, you know, he feels it, and he's got tremendous confidence, and I'm excited for our fans to understand why we thought it was a really easy decision for us to pick up the option.
So, Howie, on Monday, we are honoring Brandon Graham on 5-5, of course. It's BG Day here on the station.
That's awesome.
What's it going to be like without him like on the team, obviously, every day? I think he'll be around the NovaCare. He's not going anywhere. But
for sure.
What are we losing from that standpoint? And do you have a favorite Brandon Graham story for us?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I we've had some great players here that I've been fortunate to be around, including one I'm interviewing with right now. but the relationship that BG and I have is special because, obviously, first pick for me as a GM. And, you know, really, a lot of times I feel like our careers kind of paralleled each other. You know, there was a time where it wasn't so much fun for either of us here in Philadelphia, and we kind of fought through it together, and, you know, obviously BG making that play in the Super Bowl was incredibly special for our fans, for our team, and for me personally, obviously. And so, you know, that we've had a lot of these guys. I can't tell you that I have a favorite because, you know, all of them mean an incredible amount to me. That would be like picking a favorite kid, which I do have some days of the week. And I think that, you know, it's just a special relationship that we've had, and just a lot of conversations, a lot of support for one another. Not only do I feel like I've had his back, but I feel like he's always had my back and been tremendously confident in what I'm going to do. I mean, you know, you talk about that group of Kelsey and Fletch and BG and Lane, and, you know, throughout all those changes, they always believed. They always believed we would get it right here, and I never took that lightly. You know, I always felt special that they believed in that and felt an obligation to do whatever I could to make sure that they were as successful as possible. So in terms of BG's story, you know, I got a lot of them. I'm not sure they're suitable for this call right at this moment. But let me think about that, and maybe on BG Day, I'll unveil one.
It is remarkable, Howie, just listening to you recant sort of that journey. You know, you coming in 2010, BG, your first round draft pick there, the way the careers parallel to each other. Early in BG's career, he dealt with injuries. He dealt with not necessarily being productive. Coach Reed was on the station yesterday, and he talked about, you know, some maturity things that BG sort of worked his way through early in his career. I'm interested from your part of, you know, in those earlier years, tough discussions being had by you and whether it was Coach Reed, Jeffrey, about moving forward with BG. I'm wondering what they're like those first 4 or 5 years when he isn't as productive as expected. Was it that time? Was there ever a time where it was like, man, do we move on from him or we're sticking with him? I'm wondering, did you guys ever have those type of moments where you had to have those type of discussions?
You know, as a young GM and as your first pick, and at the time you had a couple of players that everyone thought we should draft over him.
Earl Thomas, yeah, all that.
KPP.
And
he got hurt in 2010, and he was kind of coming back in 2011. And in 2011, as he came back, you know, there was a game that we played in Miami. And I want to say at the time we were 4-8, and he was inactive. And, you know, him and I had a conversation in Miami, which was basically like, you know, if you're going down, I'm going down too, you know. And you and I are going to be in it together because if you're not going to be successful, I'm not going to be successful. There's no way I'm going to be able to make it in Philadelphia without you being successful. And we shared a moment, you know, and I guess that would be my story. And I'll never forget being in Miami, me and him eye to eye, and in typical BG fashion, you know, he looked at me with a big smile and said, I got you. You know, I'm not sure I believed it at the moment, but I mean, I was hopeful. But he did. And, you know, I feel like we've had each other's back. And, you know, how we do things in Philly, they're not for everyone. You know, I get it. You know, but we're close with our players, and that doesn't mean that we can't make hard decisions. That doesn't mean that we have to sometimes. But that guy's a friend for life, and yeah, I just couldn't be more proud of the person he is, the player he is, and two-time world champ. Beautiful thing. Beautiful thing to say.
Yep.
Man, it's just all time. It's just crazy. We're about to head into a year next year without, I mean, I know Kelsey retired last year and Fletch retired last year and Lane's still there, but an Eagle season without BG, Fletch, and Kelsey for the first time in seemingly forever.
15 years, yeah.
Forever.
Those are my security blankets. Thank gosh I got Lane. And, you know, I think that what our fans, and we miss those guys. You never replace legends. You never replace them. And so we'll never be able to do that. But I'm proud of the guys that we have here, and I do think that we have such a core group of great players and great people. And, you know, that's really the job that I have, you know, make sure that our fans look on the field and say, man, that's a great player and that's a great person. That's a great player and that's a great person. And compete for championships. That'll be an important thing for us, too. You know what I'm saying, Ike?
Yeah, listen, I hear you, man. I hear you. It's funny because we, having you on, we have you on to talk so much about your team that you build and the things around it. We rarely talk about you per se. And I know you don't necessarily like to be talked about in that light, but you deserve a lot of credit. You talked about some of the things that you had to go through rough times here as well and has bounced back with 3 Super Bowl appearances and 2 championships under your resume, putting together a pretty good resume. And I know you got a lot of work to still do, and I'm not retiring you or anything of that nature.
But, hell no.
Please no.
But I do wonder for you, how you do you still have that same sort of love and energy to want to do this for many, many years? You're still a young man. You're still a young man.
You haven't been around NovaCare very much, have you? You haven't. Yeah. I will tell you something. I couldn't be more motivated and more determined to have another parade through Broad Street where I don't get hit in the head. I feel like I only enjoyed half of that parade.
By the way, how's that going? Did you recover okay from that?
But I will tell you, I love this team, this city, my job so much. The day that I can't give you every single ounce of myself is the day I won't be here anymore. And you know, obviously, I don't get to decide that anyway, but I will never do that, and I couldn't be. I feel like all these experiences have made me better. I continue to learn, and I'm continuing to hope that you know, everything that we do leads to more world championships. You know, they become addicting; they really do. And the confetti fallen, it really gets you in a mode where nothing else matters. And so for me, I think I'm in this mode right now of just whatever it takes to get back and whatever we got to do to keep getting back there. And it makes me proud that our fans can say, you know, I felt after the first one there was a lot of, you know, they got lucky, the run. Like, that's what I heard. You know, I don't know what was said. That's what I heard in my mind, and that's what I kept in. You know, now we're at two, and what are you going to say? You know, are we lucky twice? I don't think so. But I'll tell you what, three's a charm.
That's right. Well, I tell you what, the fans, they are mirroring your sort of energy that you have right now, because they certainly are hungry for another one. We enjoy those parades. We had a great time this past year, and certainly look forward to doing it real soon. Before I get you out of here, man, what's next for you? What do you do now? Like you get to take a little bit of a break here? What do you get to do next?
Camp this week, you know, we get to look at these guys on the field, which is so much fun. We're in the middle of our off season program. Love watching our players working, and then you know, we'll get a little break here after June. We'll get another chance to celebrate. We'll get those rings, and I would say this to our fans, you know, and it's really a reminder to myself too. We do got to enjoy being world champions. We do got to enjoy that and being able to stick out our chest and being the best in the world, because that's special too. And so I'm gonna really try, because I don't know that I've done a good job of that, because of just kind of the run that we've been on here with free agency and losing players, which hurt, and then the draft. But I'm gonna try to take the next couple of months here and enjoy every second of it, and you know, be really proud of the accomplishments that we had, and at the same time, looking forward about making more accomplishments happen.
Yeah, because how are we supposed to explain to the younger generation that it used to not be this easy? You know, like I got a 2-year-old and a 4-month-old. Like, do I got to show them the Rondé Barber interception and understand that what we had to go through to get to this moment? I mean, these kids are spoiled these days, Howie. You spoiled an whole generation of Eagles fans.
Yeah, well, I see that. You know, I see it. You know, sometimes I see it that, you know, we lose a player and everyone's upset, but I promise you, we're going to do everything we can to get back. There's no resting on laurels. That doesn't mean we can't be proud. That doesn't mean we can't really stick out our chests and know that we're 2-time world champs. When I saw those two trophies with BG and him holding them, I mean, that gave me chills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got two quick hitters for you, Howie, before
okay.
I let you go.
Okay.
How much does it pain you to keep drafting these Georgia and Bama kids and no Gators? I mean, we got to get a Gator for you.
You know, I did get a Gator, an undrafted free agent.
Nice.
There you go.
You know, Montrell Johnson. You know, I think at the end of the day, here's the most important thing. I think Nolan Smith said it right. I just want to win.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I don't care where they come from. They come from Toledo. They come from Georgia. They come from Florida. They come from Alabama.
Michigan State.
Whatever it is.
Michigan State.
Team,
yeah.
That's the most important thing. What did you say, Ike?
I said Michigan State.
I knew you were going to say that.
Come on, man.
Hey, Ben Van Summeren,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, BVS,
really
baby.
Good, man.
I know. What a guy. Give me a second one.
All right. So Elliot Shoreparks won Eagles Insider of the Year on this show. Do you think he was worthy of that this year? Think he was the number one Eagles Insider?
Well, I'll tell you what. I can honestly say this, and Bob will say, I don't have social media. With all due respect to the people I'm listening to, I don't listen to anything, so I have no idea what that means. I would say this. I would say the best insider that I know, you're talking to him right here.
You want to
hear what's going on with the Eagles? Let's talk to me. Let's talk. I'll tell you the truth.
All right. We'll have you on every week then. Sounds good. All right.
Oh, geez.
I'm just kidding.
Two goes. I appreciate you guys.
All right. Thanks, Howie.
Appreciate the time, Howie.
Happy BJ Day on May 5th. That's a special thing.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you, Howie.
There he goes, Howie Roseman. What a guy. Two-time Super Bowl champ, Howie Roseman.
Yeah.
Like, his journey is crazy, man.
All right, let's talk to Big Red. John, your former coach. I mean, first time on our program here.
Legendary.
Legendary coach. There's
coach.
No question.
So Andy Reid. Wow.
14 years with the Eagles, 12 years with the Chiefs, 26 years as a head coach in pro football. He obviously, I mean, look, you guys know the deal. I don't have to tell you the resume, but I'll say this. He's coached in 5 of the last 6 Super Bowls. Think about that. The man has coached in 5 of the last 6. He has
won. It doesn't get better.
He has won three, obviously, and had a tremendous run with the Eagles and an even better run with the Kansas City Chiefs. But most important, we all know the two most important things Andy Reid ever did. Number one was signing John Ritchie 22 years ago. Because without that, Ritchie...
That was 22 years ago?
03, man.
Oh, come on.
Without that, I'm not saddled with John Ritchie next to me as a talk show host. But and the other, drafting Brandon Graham. And we honored the great BG on Monday with BG Day. And Andy, kind enough to carve out a few minutes to talk about Brandon Graham, who he drafted 15 years ago. The coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, Andy Reid. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning. Good to talk to you guys. John, man, it's been a little bit, but I sure appreciate you.
I love and miss you. Respect you so much, Coach. And once upon a time, you held my son, Joe, at an event where we were sitting at a table with the NFC Championship trophy added. It was a luncheon. And I thought at that moment, this is something. I need to take a picture in my brain because Andy Reid, the legend, is holding my son. That son... Man, that was the year he went to the Super Bowl in Jacksonville.
How about that? How's he doing?
That little boy, he wants to be a neurosurgeon. He's at the University of Michigan, and he always talks about the fact that you held him at that table. You are the man who held my son, inspired him as a 6-month-old somehow, Coach. So,
well, tell him this. Finish up his internship or whatever he's doing right now.
Yeah.
And then when the NFL has fried my brain, I'm coming to him so he can rehear.
I'll let him know. I know. I'm in that line as well.
That's so good. You know, Andy, we got so much Brandon Graham stuff obviously to do with you today, and we really appreciate you, you know, honoring Brandon, essentially what you're doing here, honoring Brandon's career. But I just want to start with you with Richie. I mean, can you imagine all those years ago that John Ritchie becomes a talk show host on WIP? What the heck?
Well, no, listen, he's the smartest guy I've probably ever coached. And at the same time, being dirty tough. And so that position that he played, that was a no grace position where you were getting the dog. You're beating the dog out of somebody, but at the same time, you're waking up the next morning very sore.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
He wakes up early. I appreciate that Coach appreciated that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it changed your life, John. Because, John, all jokes aside, I was sort of kidding earlier, but it's real. You probably would not be a WIP talk show host today if you didn't have those 2 years in Philly.
No, absolutely
if
not.
If Andy hadn't signed you.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, it was a dream come true, and Coach put me in a limo to Mechanicsburg after I signed. He said, hey, why don't you go tell your folks in person? And I mean, that was not part of the plan.
That's cool,
man. It was Coach Reid saying, hey, do the family thing.
Great.
And it was so wonderful. And that's the touch that he puts on all of this. And that's why it's so cool to talk about Brandon with you today, Coach.
Yeah, let's do that, Andy. So, BG, you brought him to town 15 years ago, and we'll kind of go through a few elements of it. Let's just start with the pre-draft evaluation of Brandon. What do you remember all those years ago when you were scouting Michigan's Brandon Graham? What enticed you to select him?
Yeah, first of all, I love Michigan players, and he was one of them, as was John at one time. So this guy was extremely quick, extremely strong, a great kid, and was just somebody in a position of need at that time. And for him to come in and do the things that he's done has just been spectacular. To play this long at that grunt position, man, that's a tough, tough position to play, and to do it for all these years is something. Everybody, you know, he had this thing, his arms were too short, or he wasn't tall enough or long enough, you know, whatever the terms are that we all put on players and destroy great ones, you know, with. So he didn't have the longest arms. He wasn't the tallest or longest guy, but he played with a big heart and played every snap. You're going to get an honest down from him, and he has great athletic ability.
Coach, how rare is Brandon Graham's enthusiasm? I mean, that energy that he brought every day, how often do you see that in a guy?
No, you love that. And it was that way when he was young, and he carried that through when he was old. And sometimes guys kind of lose that stinger there as they age up, but he never lost that. And I was lucky enough to play against them or have our team play against them the last couple Super Bowls here. And what a great, you know, he still had that energy. And I, at the Super Bowls, you get to see the guys. You have different events that you have to go to as teams, and you're there together. And just to see him, and, you know, he about broke my ribs with a big hug. So he's just, if you can get me off the ground with a hug, you've done good. And he did that. So
he's got, he can dig deep like that. That is something.
Yeah.
But you're slender now. I mean, we all see that. So that is interesting. When you talk about preparing for playing against Brandon, you're one of the greatest coaches to ever coach the game. What extra stuff do you sprinkle on top when you're coaching a Kansas City offensive lineman to prepare to block Brandon Graham, having drafted and coached him for those 3 years?
Yeah, first of all, you got to know where he's at, and then wherever he's at, you got to make sure you have that extra guy there, whether it's an offensive lineman working to him, an extra offensive lineman working to him, or a back chipping him, or a tight end chipping him. But you got to know where he's at all times, and you got to do it for four quarters.
Yeah.
Andy Reid with us here on WIP, of course, talking about BG. It's BG Day on Monday. Andy carving out some time right now for Brandon, obviously, to honor him. So, you know, Andy, one of the things that, and you know, was such a talking point when you brought him in 15 years ago was the fan base expected Earl Thomas, when you moved up, that was going to be an Earl Thomas pick. There was also a safety need at that point, and it ultimately worked out great. By the way, worked out good for Seattle, worked out great for the Eagles. Eagles won two titles. We've always wondered, how close did you come to selecting Earl Thomas? Do you remember? Was it between those two? Because we thought you were going to take Earl. You took BG. How close was that one?
Yeah, Earl was in the picture for sure. We kind of had our eyes set on Brandon. He had a great Senior Bowl, as I recall. And we needed a defensive lineman.
Yeah.
We had gotten spoiled with Hugh Douglas, and you know, we felt like we needed another guy and to fill in there, and Brandon was able to do that for us.
Andy, what did you notice, because you coached him during the years he was really struggling? I mean, he got off to a tough start. What did you notice with how he dealt with the struggles, because he turned into an all-time Eagle? I mean, the Eagles they might retire his number. I mean, he's a legendary Eagle, but you got him when he was struggling. There were some injuries. How did you sense he dealt with all that?
Yeah, he fought himself. He had this young enthusiastic makeup with him, not really immature, but the love of the game and his desire to be great and all those things, when he came up against a stiff competition that he had and wasn't used to, you know, and you might play against one of these offensive linemen in a year in the at the college level. Now you come in and you're a high pick here, and you've got to come in and try to win every play, and if you don't, then you're going to have that media come down on you, and it's a tough deal. So I didn't think he handled that great when he was young, but he worked through it, and he fought him. He was fighting himself there, and so that conflict ended up making him even stronger. And as he went on through the, you know, through his career, but he overcame it. A lot of guys don't. They just collapse, fall apart, and they're done with the NFL.
Yeah.
There's a certain stigma that comes with being a high draft pick and expectation level, and sometimes it's not reasonable.
Andy, final thing here. You know, we're going to play this audio for Brandon on Monday when he's with us in studio, but if you could just, you know, whatever you've got from your heart, a message to Brandon to honor him. We're going to play this audio directly for him on Monday upon his retirement. What would you say to BJ?
Yeah, no, listen, I love Brandon Graham. He is one of the all-time greats for the Eagles. Not only was he a great player, but he's a great person. I call him a kid, but I mean, he's past the kid stage now. So he's just a great person. And that part and his work ethic are going to carry him through the second half of his life and career and our new career. And so, but listen, Brandon Graham's he's a great one. Love him.
Andy, we wish you the best.
Coach. You are an unbelievable person, too, and we love you and respect you a lot.
I appreciate you. Love you, my man.
Andy,
keep it rolling.
Stay well, Andy. Our best to you, and maybe a trilogy next year in February. So absolute best of luck to you. Thanks for all you did for the Eagles and Philadelphia sports, and we look forward to catching up with you down the road. Thanks, Andy.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, the coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, Andy Reid, who, by the way, obviously someday, but he's got to retire for it to happen.
And why would he?
Eagles Hall of Fame.
Why would he retire?
Philadelphia Sports
point?
Hall of Fame. Pro Football Hall of Fame. None of them can happen until he retires. So we'll see. By the way, he's got a real shot at Shula's trees, record, especially with Belichick going off the rails.
Think of the coaching trees that he has created.
I know.
That he has generated. He is, man.
I hear you, man.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Joining us now, I think we can officially say our official draft expert, that is Mike Mayock. Mike, thank you for joining us for the wrap-up.
My pleasure, guys.
So I guess just a general big picture take on how you thought the Eagles did this weekend.
I liked pretty much just about everything they did. I think we anticipated philosophically they had to go defense. They did. The first five picks were defense. Like usual, they kind of get the steal of the first round with Jihad Campbell, who I had going number 9 to New Orleans in a mock draft. He's today's futuristic off-the-ball inside linebacker. They got a safety who can also play nickel. They got a couple of laboratory pieces for Stoutland University who are very talented kids in the sixth round. And Howie pulled off a classic Howie move where in the third round, pick 96, they traded down twice. They went from 96 to 111. That's what, 15, 16 places. Effectively half of one round is what they traded down. And it netted them 3 extra draft picks, 2 this year and 1 next year. So I thought it was a typical high-level Eagles draft.
You mentioned Jihad Campbell as a, an off-ball linebacker. There's been some conversation about his future, whether it's at edge or whether it is at linebacker. What do you see from him moving forward?
Yeah, I when I say he's kind of a futuristic guy, I think given what offenses do today, the proliferation of wideouts, athletic tight ends, 1 and 2 back sets, there's a variety of different things you've got to handle. And there are just so many different sub-defenses you can have. When you get interchangeable pieces that can do more than one thing, there's true value attached to that. So this is a guy that your base defense can sit and play off the ball linebacker. He's got great speed. He can play pass coverage, both man-to-man and zone. I'd like to see him a little heavier coming downhill and in heavy run game stuff. But he can also stay on the field in all your sub packages, and maybe that's where he's going to be his best. He can rush inside on the A-gap. You can put his hand in the dirt and put him outside at the 9 technique and let him play a defensive end or a 3-4 outside linebacker. Does he need to develop as an edge rusher? Yes. He didn't do that primarily at Alabama. But when he had the opportunity, he took advantage and he did. That's what he was in high school. So I think for a creative defensive coordinator, and that's what the Eagles have, there's a real opportunity to use this kid and develop him in a variety of ways.
Yeah, I love the fact that he loves studying guys like Fred Warner as a linebacker. And I tell you, Mike, if he can be Fred Warner, I'd be more than happy with that with this kid.
Yeah, and Fred went in what, the third round, I want to say. Mm. I mean, this kid has every bit. He's got as much or more talent than Fred Warner. And now it's just about, A, staying healthy because he's had some health issues, mm-hmm. and, B, applying himself to the best of his ability. And I think Vic will get it out of him, Mike.
Safety out of Texas. Is it Mukuba? How do you pronounce that?
Mukuba, I think.
Mukuba?
Drew Mukuba, right?
Drew Mukuba. I can't say I saw a lot of him play down there in Texas, although, listen, Texas plays in a lot of big games in the SEC. They've been in the playoffs the last couple of years. He's played in big games. How do you like that pick, and where do you see him sort of as a safety at this level as well?
Yeah, it was interesting because he spent his first 3 years at Clemson, and I'm not even sure he had an interception at Clemson, and then he transferred to Texas and had 5 picks this year. So they got him around the ball more. He translates as a free safety and nickel. He's got experience at nickel. He even played a little corner outside stuff at Clemson. So he's a guy with a lot of versatility, finished with the ball in his hands five times this year, which I think is a big deal. I think when the Eagles go to camp, you know, they'll line up with Blankenship and probably Sidney Brown at strong safety. But this Makuba kid ought to push both those guys. I think he's more of a free safety. But the cool thing is, and I think what Vic will appreciate, is both Cooper DeJean and this kid have the ability to play multiple positions. Makuba can play free safety and nickel. I think Cooper DeJean could play all five positions back there at a fairly high level.
Mike Mayock with us. Now, Mike, the quarterback factory struck again. The Eagles took Kyle McCord, one of my favorites in the sixth round. What did you think of McCord?
See, this is where I have to be honest and tell you that even though he's a St. Joe prep kid, I did about 130, 140 kids on tape, and he was not one of them.
Ah, oh, okay.
So when I don't see a tape, I don't talk about a kid. I saw him on TV. I'm excited about him in Philadelphia because of his background at the prep, but I can't really compare him to what you need to hear.
So, like, can I just go back to Campbell one second? And this goes back to something you told us when we were first talking about the draft. You were saying when, you know, all the teams get the same medicals and everybody looks at them differently. So, you know, what we heard was that Jihad Campbell was slipping because of the shoulder issue. A labral tear in his shoulder had surgery. It doesn't seem to me, hearing about that surgery, that would cause that sort of drop. Is there any insight you can give as to why that sort of thing would be such a red flag?
There was a late conversation that went around the league about a knee issue also.
Okay. And it seems like he had a scope in 23, I think.
Something came up again.
Okay.
The last month of the draft about his knee.
Ah.
And I can tell you, when I was with the Raiders, like we would, depending on the doctor, a doctor might say you're meeting with the head coach and the GM, and you've got your doctors in, and you're going through all the red flags. And a doctor might say something like, at most, you'll get one contract out of him. He's got a chronic knee. Or, you know, that's a common thing you might hear from a doctor. Okay. And then a GM and a head coach have to sit down and say, well, wait a minute. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that about a player. He's got one contract in him, and he plays 10 years in the league without a problem.
Right.
Okay. But your owner sits in a lot of those meetings, and you do have to be very cognizant and aware that if you draft a kid that technically has a problem that your doctor identified, and he gets hurt year one with a knee and never plays again, and you took him in the first round, he's going to look at you as the GM. So you've got to be very aware of all that stuff, but the Eagles obviously looked at it and said, it's not a problem for us, and we've got the infrastructure that we believe in.
So, Mike, the biggest story of the weekend was Shedeur Sanders' slide from, I would say, 4 months ago. He was thought of as a top three pick, and then he ends up sliding to the fifth round with the Browns. What did you think of him going into the draft? And then, B, can you give us some insight as to why you think he slid the way that he slid?
So, from an evaluation perspective, I did a lot of tape on him, 23 and 24. I had a similar grade on him that I had on Bo Nix a year ago, and I was probably low on Bo Nix. I had a second-day grade on him. Okay, I had a second-day grade on Shedeur. I had a second-day grade on Jackson Dart from Ole Miss. Okay, and typically kids get elevated, quarterbacks get elevated because of the need throughout the league. So that was my evaluation, potential starter, day two pick. When he didn't go in the first round, I thought for sure he would go two or three. I wasn't in any of the meetings. There's a lot of innuendo out there, and I can't jump in on either side because I've never met the kid in my life. I do know when you look at a situation where there's a lot surrounding him, just like I look at a Tim Tebow years ago. You know, Tim Tebow, if he was going to be your starting quarterback and take you to playoffs and all, you'll put up with the circus surrounding him. But as soon as he wasn't a starter anymore, nobody wanted to deal with that.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So I don't know to what level that occurred, but I think a lot of teams would look at it and say, what do we want to deal with here? And again, I've never met the kid, so I am not going to take any shots there whatsoever. I thought he was a second day pick.
Yeah, Mike, I mentioned earlier that it's one thing to go through the evaluation process of the game footage. You've talked about that, the stuff you see that they did throughout the season. Then you have the gym shorts Olympics at the combine, right? You do that part. But then there's the getting to know the player, the evaluation of sitting down in meetings, communicating with him, getting to know him a little bit personally as much as you can in as short a time as you can. How often does that sort of turn or change the perception of a player, regardless if it's, and I would imagine it's more important for a quarterback because of the position he plays and the impact that he has. But how much does that change once a GM or coaches get a chance to sit down and meet a player face to face and talk with them, and whether or not that can turn an organization sort of away from a player?
Yeah, the game tape should trump all, with the caveat that the quarterback position, like you just said, it's really critical. If you're looking at a kid that potentially is the face of your organization, your head coach, your offensive coordinator, your quarterback coach, your owner want to get to know this kid prior to taking him, especially if you're using a first or second round pick. You want to know who this kid is. You talk to all, you do all the homework you can possibly do. And again, I can't tell you what kind of impression the kid did or didn't make when he got inside buildings, but I can tell you that those impressions are really important, especially to coaches. And coaches look at it like, you're the guy that we've got to get the most out of to make our team better. And are you going to live in that building? Are you going to grind? Are you going to be able to lift weights with the offensive linemen? Are you going to be able to get the respect from everybody in that building and lead us? And that starts with little simple things. And if I don't know anything about Shador, mm-hmm. but if a coach doesn't like a presentation, whether it's on a Zoom call or in your building or wherever, that can hurt a kid, I think, especially at that position.
Yep.
What do you make of... And it's been, I don't know if you watched it live, and I'm sure you've certainly seen the clips. Mel Kiper Jr.'s sort of reaction to his slide was something that I've never seen on television.
I've never
television
seen anything like it before, Mike. I swear I've never seen anything like Mel this weekend. I've never seen it, and I watch the draft every year. And Mel has had his moments over the years. I've been watching the draft since the early 90s, so Mel has been around for a long time. I remember the Vince Tobin stuff. Like, I remember all that stuff. I thought this weekend, Mike, my goodness, he was in his personal feelings over this Shador Sanders thing.
So you guys know my background, and I did the NFL Network version of that 20 years almost. So I'm loyal to my guys there, and I watch them. But
me too, by the way.
Yes, yeah.
But, I watched NFL Network too until Spike told me about Mel.
Yeah, Ike was doing the show on Thursday night, and I was home watching ESPN. I told him on Friday, I was like, "Dude, you got to see Mel Kiper with this Shador Sanders thing. I've never seen anything like it."
It's hard because it felt like he took it personally. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Yep.
And when you're doing that job, you can invest a lot of time and effort, and kind of him going off in the entire league, not knowing how to evaluate quarterbacks and all that. On one hand, I understand you get frustrated at things, and he's been doing this for a long time, so I give him a lot of respect. But I just thought he kind of went off the deep end, and it went on for way too long.
Yeah.
Mike Mayock with us. Mike, one more from me. The Eagles did not draft one player that they brought in for a top 30 visit, which was strange. As a former GM, does that feel out of the ordinary to you?
The people don't really understand the 30 visits are kind of, they're a gamut of different types of players. It's not the top 30 players on your board or even close. It's usually guys that you have medical questions on, off-the-field questions on. sometimes guys you don't think are going to get drafted that you want to recruit as undrafted free agents when the draft ends, and you want them to know you're interested in them prior to it starting, in addition to some of the guys you might take up top. So it's a little surprising that none of them got drafted, but I certainly wouldn't see it as a major aberration.
All right, Mike. Well, we appreciate the analysis.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, there is no real emotional meltdown from you here, but maybe we'll check in next time. Maybe next year you'll have one.
I'd really appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Mike. Baldy, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Good afternoon, Spike. Good to be with you, man. Thanks.
So, just I guess big picture overall thoughts. How do you think the Eagles did over the weekend in the draft?
I think they did well. I mean, they got a lot of selections. They drafted, we haven't seen a linebacker drafted in the first round since 1979. Says something about the power that Vic Fangio has over there and the value of the player. They traded up to make sure that they got him, and nobody jumped in front of him, Jahad Campbell. But Akuba, I mean, they showed last year that they could integrate rookies, with talent right into the lineup and get immediate results. I think they could do the same thing here. They lost a couple of defense linemen, and if you'll get Ty Robinson, who's just a beast inside, I think he's better than Milton Williams. So, I mean, I think they did well. They got three offensive linemen that, Stoutley could work with. And they got a local kid, a quarterback that I think has played well at two stops at both Ohio State and Notre Dame. So I think the Eagles did good. I mean, obviously they're a very talented team. And so you're not going to get a whole lot of guys that can contribute right away. There are not a lot of holes, but I think some of the guys they took can contribute right away.
We'll get to Jahad Campbell in a second. You think Ty Robinson's better than Milton Williams?
Yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah, he's bigger. He's stronger. Milton Williams is a good player. I mean, he didn't start. He filled in because Jordan Davis doesn't play a lot of snaps. But I think Ty Robinson is a beast. And I know Matt Rhule loved him at Nebraska. I mean, he's bigger than Milton Williams. I think he's going to be a good player for him. He's going to rotate right away. Whether he can become the pass rusher that Milton became, we'll wait and see because everybody has to learn pass rush. Nobody comes in as a finished product. But he's got everything it takes to be a good one.
No, I agree, Baldy. He has some traits on him, man. You put him next to Jalen Carter. That could be pretty scary. Big man that can move, but really the most athletic and probably the best athlete of the D tackles in the draft.
Yeah, I was at the combine when he ran, when the whole defensive lineman, I mean, we knew it was going to be a loaded defensive line draft.
Yeah.
30 defensive tackles got taken. And so it's just a question of what did you want? But, for a guy that's 290 plus on a big, thick frame, like he's running in the 4.9s, that's a guy that can run, and he plays with great effort. He understands his job is to, stop the run, affect the quarterback, and get to the football. He did all those things at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. It showed up constantly. A relentless motor on a guy with a big body that, played in a good conference, went against good competition.
Yeah.
And I thought it showed up constantly. But he caught my eye at the combine, I can be honest with you, the way that he competed and some of the things that he did there.
When you look at Jahad, right, and what he does as a player, what do you think he needs to get better at the NFL level? We're talking about him being a potential edge rusher. You're a former offensive lineman. What are some of the things you think he needs to improve upon to be a good edge rusher in the NFL?
Well, I mean, it starts with, first step quickness. He's got that. You can't win the 100-meter dash if you don't have a great first start. And a great first step. He's got a good first step. I don't think he's a polished pass rusher. I mean, he kind of dipped and ripped and ghosted people because of his takeoff. That's not going to happen. He's going to have to develop pass rush if you're going to use him in that, in that role. We've seen Nolan Smith develop, so he's not as fast as Nolan Smith, but he certainly has size to his advantage. He's a pump kid, Ike. He's gained a lot of weight here over the last 2 years. To really play the linebacker spot. So, but, from just a linebacker standpoint, better than anybody. I mean, just what's going on behind you in this passing game of the NFL? Who's the crossers? Who's the bootleg? Who's coming?
Yeah.
Who's, you know, like what's going on behind you without looking? Like who, how you read route combinations as you drop it in coverage? Because most guys outside of the Fred Taylors and Roquans, I mean, they don't get good depth in their drops in a passing game to take things away and to affect the passing game. So those are things that you don't really have. I mean, I've seen him do it at Alabama. I'm not saying he can. He's got an interception off a, you know, a good drop but last year. But I think that the passing game is always something. And then how you match up with running backs and the guys that you have to match up with, and then the tight ends that you have to cover when you're in man coverage.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how Coach Fangio uses him on that side of the football, because you mentioned a lot of things there that he may be asked to do that not a lot of linebackers can do. Give you a little bit in the rush, rushing the passer game, and then also affect the passing game by either man coverage or dropping into coverage. You think he has that ability to be an all-around player?
I do. I thought he was the best linebacker in the draft. And I'm not saying that just because I'm on your show right now. I thought he was the best linebacker. I watched him at that combine. I watched him get ready to compete for all the different drills that he did. Like, he was – you can just tell that he is a meticulous kid. And, you know, he's a local kid and all that stuff. That's good. But, you know, he looks meticulous in how he goes about his business. And I think going about his business is really what separates him. I think he thinks like a pro. He's got big-time athletic ability. I mean, he can really run. I mean, he's faster than Zach Bond. We saw Zach Bond, you know, get 150 tackles last year. But he's faster than Zach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thought Zach had pass rush ability, too. That's how he was used in New Orleans. And Vic said, well, we're not going to – we'll blitz him. And they did blitz him on occasion and rush him on occasion. But, you know, he was a kid that was cross-trained at Wisconsin. And I feel like Jahad's been cross-trained, too. But I think his natural position – is off the ball inside linebacker.
Mm. Talking to our Odyssey NFL insider, Brian Baldinger. Baldy, what did you think of the Shedeur Sanders slide into the fifth round?
You know, when you're taken with the 144th pick, I mean, the league's basically telling you that you're a backup quarterback. Go prove us, you know, show us that you're more than that. No, we've seen guys taken later in the, you know, Kirk Cousins or Brock Purdy or Tom Brady. We've seen a few get drafted late and become star players. But it doesn't happen often. I don't know that with his arm that he is going to compete in that division in Cincinnati and Cleveland and Baltimore, you know, when the weather turns nasty like it does. And can he throw through those conditions the way Lamar can, Joe Flacco did, Joe Burrow does, Ben Roethlisberger did? I mean, that's, you know, that's asking a lot out of a guy who doesn't have a great arm. Now, he might beat you with speed of decision-making and, you know, his accuracy, it got better the deeper the ball was. But, you know, he was the second quarterback drafted by him. I mean, they're basically telling him that compete for the backup spot right now.
Talking to Brian Baldinger. So, wait, what was I going to ask about Shedeur? The rumor was that the Browns jumped and traded for that pick because they thought the Eagles were interested in taking him. Do you think the Eagles would have taken him, and do you think it would have been a mistake if they did?
Well, they took Kyle McCord, so they're going to, you know, they're in the business of drafting quarterbacks and collecting quarterbacks and developing them. They just lost Kenny Pickett this year. He was a backup. We'll see what Tanner McKee becomes, but they have a strong, strong history of drafting quarterbacks. Now, if they got wind of that and they decided to do it, okay, but why? You've already drafted Dylan Gabriel. You've already said that Dylan Gabriel, he was drafted 50 picks in front of Shedeur. You're already saying in a crowded quarterback room with Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett that Dylan Gabriel is a guy that we want to develop. Now you're going to jump in front of the Eagles, potentially jump in front and take Shedeur because maybe the Eagles take him? That doesn't really make sense. Now, it might be true, Spike. I'm not saying it's not true, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. None of it really makes a lot of sense. But, look, the Eagles, they took McCord. Maybe they would have taken Shedeur.
Well, I'll tell you, it would have been a different radio station. WIP would have been talking about different stuff for the last couple of days if they'd taken Shedeur Sanders. I can tell you that much. All right, Baldy. Well,
that's part of it, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, is Dylan Gabriel going to get a fair shot? You know, because the attention that Shador is going to get, hopefully, Shador goes about his business here and learns the playbook and gets to meet his teammates and becomes a great, you know, just the activity of becoming a pro. Hopefully he does that.
Yeah.
The circus atmosphere. I was there when Manziel got drafted. It was a circus. So it's going to be a circus again. He's bringing it. You know, that's not a reason not to take him, believe me. Like, I want Shador to be successful. I want all these guys to be good. But it's going to be a crazy scenario up there in Cleveland right now.
Well, yeah. Especially...
It's a reason not to take him if the talent doesn't warrant it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes you wonder why they took him. I mean, there's the rumors out there that the owner wanted him to take him. Because, yeah, I mean, if you're the Browns and you think enough of Shador Sanders, you don't take Dylan Gabriel in the third round. Like,
Shador sell a lot more Sanders jerseys than Gabriel jerseys.
Well, not to me. You know I love Dylan Gabriel. But to most Cleveland fans, yeah, I think so. All right, Baldy, we appreciate your time as always, brother.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah. All right, guys, you bet.
There he is, Brian Baldinger, Odyssey NFL Insider, host of the Best Football Show podcast, where you can get in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
That Cleveland owner was like, hold on. What jersey are we putting in the pro shop this year?
Gabriel?
Can he pick it?
Pick it? That guy's got tiny hands.
The stretch by Finnegan and a 2-0 in the dirt, and there's a stop. Here comes Stott. He'll score! The ball got away up the first baseline. Bryson Stott with a mad dash for the plate. Dives head first, and the Phillies have won it on a walk-off wild pitch.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Joining us every... Wait, what's today? Wednesday. Wednesday at 3 o'clock is the great Larry Anderson. Quite a range of emotions from everyone last night, L.A.
Yeah. It's one of those, it's often, you know, a lot of times you'll hear people say, I feel like we lost that game.
Mm-hmm.
That was the epitome of that saying right there. That was one of the worst games I've ever seen. And I'm serious. It was terrible. But then you win a game and that's the bottom line. And I said it last night, a win is a win, you know, however you do it. But man, was that ugly to watch.
Well, so do you walk away from that game saying... They found a way, even when they played bad, and that's a mark of a good team. Or do you walk away saying a good team doesn't make that many mistakes in one game? Like, what is the latter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, a good team doesn't. We're 28th in defense. And 28th in defense, 29th in BOPE and ERA. And our slugging, which I thought this team was built for, is. I don't know where they're at in that ranking, but it can't be very high. And I know it's early, but you can only keep saying it's early for like 2 or 3 months, I guess. I know there's a lot of season left, but it's got to get turned around. The sloppy play is what's just—it's baffling. I mean, this is not a young team; it's a veteran team. But just to see some of the mistakes that just. That are happening. I'm like, and this isn't just last night. This is watching the road trip, watching the games in New York, the first one in Chicago. It's like, holy cow. they got to turn this around a little bit in some areas and just be a little better. And I don't know if it's concentration or focus. I don't know what it is.
I always wonder, LA, with baseball, once you get in the season, trying to improve upon fundamentals can sometimes be difficult. Like with football, we only play one game a week, so you got the other 4 or 5 days of the week to sort of focus on these things in practice, and hopefully it translates to the game on Sunday or Monday whenever you play. With baseball, I don't feel like they get – like you guys don't have that opportunity to work on a lot of stuff because you're playing 5 or 6 days out of the week. So how do you improve on some of those small things that seem to keep plaguing this team, at least from a defensive fundamental standpoint?
Well, I think you can't, to me, you know, you're right what you said. You can't do it with, you know, playing 162 games and playing games every day. But you can take, like, a few here and a few there, you know, before the game, early batting practice. You can go out, you can work on things. You don't have to have the whole team out there, but you can work on outfield, you know, play on one day, infield play the next day or second and short or, you know, first, whatever. You can mix it up a little bit so you're not wearing guys out. But it's almost like you need to work on these things. It's stuff that the fundamental stuff should be done in the minor leagues.
Right.
That's first and foremost.
Right.
I'm a big believer in that. You know, what you're taught in your early part of your career is what stays with you. And if you're not getting taught things that you should be getting taught, then those mistakes continue. And I'm not saying we're not teaching them in the minor leagues. I haven't been down there in 20 years, but some of the little things that you don't do, you can't do is just, that's what's baffling. Either they forget or it's not been ingrained enough in them to do it at a lower level before they get here. But to see that kind of play, and you know, I don't think it's specific to the Phillies. I think there's other teams that go through these things.
Right.
But as a veteran club, though, you just keep working at it, you keep grinding. But you have to want to get better. You have to understand that you're not that good right now. I think that once you realize that, then you say, okay, we got to get to work. We can get to work and let's make this better. If you don't think you're having a problem, if you think everything's okay and it'll turn around just as the season goes along, I don't think it's going to get better.
So, LA, let me ask you this, and I know he's not the one on the field. I know ultimately it's the players who have to decide. But when you're talking about concentration issues and fundamental issues, at what point do you say, well, is the manager stressing to them or holding them accountable for these errors? Because I agree with you, it's not just in the field, it's on the base paths, and it's all these, what are you thinking? Why are you doing that? That I feel like I'm saying that so many times. So at what point do you question whether it is being stressed enough from the people who are supposed to be holding them accountable for that?
That's a good point. But one thing, I think Thompson, Rob is very good at keeping his emotions in check, not showing, you know, not getting over jubilant or getting down. He stays pretty even keel. And I think because of that, I think people think, well, maybe he lets players get away with stuff. But that's not the case. I mean, knowing what I know, he's not afraid to call a player in and read him the riot act. He isn't. The one thing I this is just a matter of opinion. Sometimes I think it's better if he would just call him out publicly and let people know that he is getting on him and busting on him for not doing things right. Because to me, that sends a message. I think more than anything is the players themselves should be able to hold each other accountable. And that one thing I really appreciated last night was Trey Turner when he came on the post game and he says, Scott talked about his four hits and that. He goes, yeah, I might be responsible for helping us win, but it's also responsible for putting us in that position, you know, with my sloppy defense, or whatever he said it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. As a player, instead of guys making an excuse or, you know, I didn't get a grip or I didn't make the play. I should have, you know, and holding themselves accountable, I think is huge. But for the players to do that to each other, I don't think that's a bad thing. It's not a matter of getting in their face. It's a matter of saying, "Hey, dude, what are you doing there?" And talk about it. I don't know if they ever talk about it. I'm not on the bench, so maybe they do. But just little things, throwing to the wrong base. Does somebody say something? I know Paco talks a lot to the outfielders about the mistakes they make, and I get reports from, you know, players coming off the field and coaches saying something to a player or getting on them about this or that. It's not a lack of that, I don't think. But I think the biggest thing, like I said, I think if the players would hold each other, would get on each other. But I don't think this is a team that has the players that want to do that or that should do that. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they just don't think that's the right way to do it. And so then it's just a matter of opinion. You know, my opinion is it'd make a big difference if the players would get on each other, because when you're being held accountable by your peers, it means a little more than if you're being held accountable by your coach and manager. Although the coaches and managers are the ones that help make the decision whether you stay or go, I think it's incumbent upon the players to get on each other, and not in a bad way, but in a constructive way.
Oh, yeah.
Put your arm around them and go, hey, we can't do that this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's got to be somebody that, I don't know if anybody takes the lead down there. Maybe they do. You know, maybe I'm talking way out of school, but it doesn't show. And I would like to see that myself.
It does seem like the leadership of this team is not the kind of, they seem like there are high character guys there who care, but I've never gotten the sense that even Bryce or Schwarber or that they are the call somebody out type of leader. It seems more like the supportive, quiet, do the right thing kind of guy, and a lot less the tell somebody that they did something wrong when it was wrong kind of guy. That's the perception I've always gotten from them.
And I agree with you. Like, I really do. I don't. And sometimes you have a team that there's just not somebody on there that's really a leader. You know, I think there's a number of guys on this team that could be a leader. And the thing is that you don't have to be hitting 350, or you don't have to have 20 home runs in a bag with you know 45 RBIs a month into the season to be a leader. You can. Dalton was a leader, and he was a 230 hitter before 93. Or 92 maybe, mm-hmm. but he was still a leader of that club, and people respected him because he would stand up no matter what he did. If he went 0 for 3 with 3 punch-outs, he was still the leader of that team, and he wasn't afraid to call somebody out. And you know, if they wanted to turn on him and go, hey, you punched out 3 times, what about you? He would stay there in a minute, and I mean, nobody would say that to him. But they respected him too much, I think. But the fact that he didn't have to, you don't have to be the best player on the team. You don't have to be the anything. You just have to have the desire to want to be better and hold your other teammates accountable.
Yeah, but you better
first. It's not easy either, but it can be done.
And obviously, you would agree with this. Being that guy, you got to make sure you're practicing what you're preaching. In other words, yeah.
So
I didn't mean to interrupt, that's exactly what it is. I mean, if you're not playing hard all the time. It's tough to be a leader because then people can come back at you and go, well, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. And that has nothing to do with
ability or anything.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's, I mean, I don't know. I would like to see it. I really would. But I don't know if anybody feels comfortable doing it.
Speaking of Bryce, he has struggled. You know, he only had 2 hits on the road trip. And are you seeing anything out of him when you're watching him that would, you know, we're in here wondering, is he hurt? Is it his back? Is he, like, what's going on? Do you see anything when you watch Bryce that gives you sort of a clue as to what's going on with him?
Not really. I mean, I haven't been around that much as far as actually being in person at the game, obviously. But watching the games and that, I don't see anything that you know, it jumps out at me that, oh, he's doing this or he's not doing this or whatever. I don't know. I have had people say, and I'm not making this up, but people have said they look like they're just not really having much fun. And that's something that this team always saw. And I don't know if that's energy. I don't know if it's, you know, playing better or not playing, you know, playing worse. It's just, you know, I don't see it. And I don't know if there's a reason for it or the fact that they're not playing like they should or like they expect to. But, I mean, I always thought to me, and maybe I'm different, but it should be fun. You should make it enjoyable. It's got to be. I know it's a job, but it's a pretty fun job, and it pays pretty well.
Yep.
And so there's not a whole lot to really complain about other than let's go have some fun and let the chips fall where they may. But let's enjoy doing this. Let's do it together. Let's have fun and at the same time hold each other accountable. It seems awfully easy, and it's very easy for me to sit here and say that. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy to get it done, but I also say it's not impossible either.
I'm going to throw this in there, L.A., because you brought up they don't look like they're having fun. Now, the Chiefs Bob's operator is not here anymore.
Where's Stubby?
So, he's not here. In all seriousness, I'm wondering, is there too much of a, I guess, focused atmosphere in the clubhouse versus having the loose clubhouse they've had over the last couple of years that maybe some of these players relied on far as giving them the energy that they need coming to the ballpark every day. It seemed like they came in with such a business-like approach this year. I'm just wondering, are they enjoying playing the game? And I know that's tough to sort of balance because you want them to have a business-like approach. But when I'm hearing it doesn't look like they're enjoying playing the game, that was one of the things that popped in my head. It's like, well, I'm wondering, are they enjoying playing the game? Do they miss doing the daycare stuff and the music in the locker room? I mean, I don't know. You play all these games, and there has to be different things to keep you motivated and keep you excited about coming to the ballpark every day. I just wonder if there's too much of a business-like approach that they just all seem tightly wound, and no one seems to be playing with a smile on their face every day. You think that could be something that they might need to consider or look into?
That makes sense to me, Ike. I mean, I haven't thought of that, but it makes sense. I mean, and this isn't – I'm not down there. I can't answer in the clubhouse if they're acting too businesslike. But from a distance, it's pretty valid to look at it and think that. I'm just not seeing the fun that they've had. I don't know. And I was a guy that felt like, you know, it's a job, but you should have fun. You should enjoy doing what you're doing. And let people see that you enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know? The other thing, I mean, they're not playing great baseball. And I think that can wear on guys as a team, individually, absolutely. But also as a team, it's like, man, we're not playing very good. They're not going to come out generally and say that. But I think they realize it. And I think maybe they feel like, well, we gotta get our nose down to the grindstone and get more serious about this. Maybe that's the case, but I would just like, I would definitely like to see them just a little more looser, a little more having fun, and you know, it's easy to have fun out there when you're playing a game, or it should be, mm-hmm. And when you're struggling, obviously it's tougher, and so maybe I don't like excuses, but maybe it's just they're not playing that well right now, and individually some guys are struggling, and maybe that's kind of holding things down. I just don't know.
Well, aside from that, Miss Lincoln, how was the play?
Exactly.
Jeez. Holy moly. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll end it on a positive note, or hopefully. Watching Alvarado bear down and strike those three guys out last night was awesome. I know.
He should have got the win and a save.
Yeah, that was awesome, man.
Well, Kirkren got the win last night.
That was the least deserving win I think I've seen all year. But Alvarado was awesome. That was fun to watch. You know,
it was phenomenal. And seeing his energy and pumping his fists and coming off the mound. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like to see more of that. I'm not a big fan of the showboating and that, but the excitement and the joy that he had coming off the mound of what he just did, that was great. I loved it. I think everybody loved it. You know, it was tremendous.
LA, our first caller compared Johan Rojas to a young Willie Mays. Do you agree with that assessment?
Wait, how young? Like six?
That was our first call today.
Six-year-old Willie Mays, yeah.
That's I don't know. That
interesting
might be,
comp, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that.
It's a little bit of a stretch, know. LA. That's a little bit of a stretch by the caller. That's a little bit of a stretch.
I gotta believe it. Yeah, I'm like a young Willie Mays, like at 6 years old, maybe. But when Willie Mays was 22 or 23, I don't know if I'm ready for the comparison there yet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We all thought it was a bit of a stretch. All right, LA.
Well, there's no doubt he's got some talent, but. Not Willie Mays.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, we got Chris Sanchez going tonight. Hopefully we win another series and on to the next one. We appreciate you as always, LA.
All right, brother.
You got it. Talk to you guys.
There he is, Larry Anderson.
So I just want to point this out real quick.
Yeah.
Age 23, Willie Mays. Yeah. Age 24, Willie Mays.
Yeah.
41 home runs. 51 home runs. 345 average. Over 1,000 OPS both those years.
Yeah.
I can see Rojas turning the corner. I see it.
He's only 40 home runs away from 41.
Squint. Yeah. You squint. You can see some Willie Mays out there for sure.
Yeah.
Yes, it is that time of week.
Hey.
A Fransky Friday on the Midday Show, sponsored by Morgan and Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Scott with us as the Phillies get set for a big series this weekend
Scott.
Against the Diamondbacks. Scott, how are you?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Scott, this is the question I have for you. I've always told you every time we talk to you, you do a great job of framing every moment that I hear when I'm in the car with the Phillies. But my question for you is this, Scott. How hard is it for you when you see certain things that happen to kind of pull back what you kind of want to say? Because I feel a lot of times that in certain incidents that there are certain things you want to say, but you don't want to be too heavy-handed with your critique. So what is it? What process do you go through when you try to pull that back a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think you try to simply – I assume you're talking about managerial decisions.
Well, no, I mean, like on I mean, like stuff that has happened on the field. Yeah, I mean, we don't have, it's just, let me just say this, Scott. It's certain times that when I hear you, because like I said, you do a great job of painting pictures, that when you, your silence is deafening. You know what I mean? I just kind of wonder, how is that moment for you?
Well, I mean, first of all, you realize what your job is, and your job is to tell people what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
My job is not to come on and have hot takes. I'm not there for hot sports opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there to describe the game. We are there to analyze the game to a certain extent. And by that, part of my job in that regard is to look at both sides of every coin.
Mm-hmm.
And to look at all the relevant angles of a particular play, it's really easy for us as fans to watch a game and say, that guy should have caught that ball. Well, no joke. He should have caught the ball, but he didn't. And there's a lot of reasons why he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a lot of people getting on Trey Turner this week. Oh, his throw was bad. He didn't step on the base. Do you guys have any concept of everything that he has to check off in a split second?
Gotcha.
You're sitting on your couch watching it, reviewing it 100 times on video. There's a lot that's going on. Now, look, I'm not trying to say that by way of defending Trey. He's made mistakes, and it's not like the guy tries to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to get better. And I actually firmly believe I have watched every inning of every game, and Trey is a better shortstop now than he was a year ago. Period. Okay?
No.
He's doing different things with his throws, and mm-hmm. it's led to some bad throws, but he's trying to improve as a shortstop. And look, again, everybody can, you guys can say what you want, company guy or whatever, but I am a company guy. I do work for the company.
I guess I'm considered a company guy too, Scott.
When Hugh defends the Phillies, we call him a company guy around here.
But you
literally are. That's okay. You're a Phillies employee.
But here's the deal. I still feel the need, if Rob Thompson makes the decision, what my job is in that moment is to say, here are the things he's probably thinking about.
Mm.
Here's one thing, here's another thing, here's another thing. And I can't speak for Rob. He'll have to do that for himself after the game. My job in the moment is to only say, here are the different variables to a particular play or a mm-hmm. particular situation. And I spend time with the manager every day. I like the manager a great deal. And I am a firm believer in managers are managing the game, but they do not win or lose the game. By and large, players win or lose the game. This is how the game works. Charlie Manuel will tell you that. He's got more wins in Phillies history because you have really, really good players, right? Mm-hmm. And good players. And the players win the game, players lose the game. So, but my job in the moment is to simply – let's paint the picture, and that includes some good and some bad and some, somewhere in the middle.
No, I respect that, even though I felt a little bit attacked when you talk about the guy on the couch, because that Scott, that's me. Scott, that's me. But no, you're right. You're right, and everything you're saying is right, because there's a lot that goes on, and I was always curious about, for you, how is it for you? And I appreciate that, because I think that a lot of times that people don't look at it like that. We're looking at it in a vacuum. So I totally appreciate that, but I do feel attacked a little bit.
Usually I'm the one attacking you. All right, Scott, let's get your thought on something that the Phillies are barreling towards, which is a decision in their rotation. So we know Ranger Suarez is back on Sunday, which is great, and he's healthy and ready to go. But Scott, Taiwan Walker has pitched well. And look, these are good problems to have. I mean, it's always better to have more good starting pitching than less. So they have a surplus right now. And they also have a need down in the bullpen. Scott, I heard Taiwan after the game last night, and he said he's a starting pitcher, and he thinks he's pitched well enough to be in the rotation. I agree with him based on his performance so far this year. How do you think this plays out? Because the Phillies have said Rangers starting Sunday, but there's been no clarification after that.
Yeah, and I don't know when we may or may not get it today or the next day. I don't know, but obviously, I don't think. I think there's a chance they'll go through every now and then with six starters. I really do. But I think if you examine the schedule, you know, for instance, there's an off day Monday, and then there's an off day the following Thursday. So it's not a crazy long stretch of games. Like, they just came through that game, that stretch of 16 straight. They would have loved to have had six starters available, I think, at that point. And because, again, they very much play the long view, and they very much err on the side of trying to keep guys healthy and fresh for the long haul. And I think, you know, some articles written this week, I think they proved that point, that they're really pretty good at managing the workload so that guys stay healthy. The fact they went through a whole month using only 13 pitchers is unheard of in today's game. So I do think, I mean, somebody's got to go to the bullpen. I do believe it'll be Taiwan. I don't know when that'll be. And I don't know how that looks, because then essentially you kind of have two long guys, right? Can one of them, Joe Ross, Taiwan Walker, can they be a leverage guy? You know, pitch one inning in the seventh with the game on the line. I don't know. I think the thing, you know, for any starter who turns reliever, if you want to be really used as a reliever, you got to learn to pitch back-to-back nights. Because if your stuff is not as good the second night, what good, you know what I mean? You're just not available. So I think that's going to be a learning process. I don't think it's the last start Taiwan Walker has made as a Philly. I think he'll be called upon again. I just don't know when that'll be.
You know, Scott, I'm kind of curious, because we've been having this conversation the whole week about this six-man rotation and everything. But I would like to assume that before you even make that decision, that you have to have a conversation with Zach Wheeler before this is even, you know, talked about publicly. Do you think that went on before we decided to go to the six-man rotation?
Well, I don't know that anything's been decided.
Okay.
As far as the six-man rotation. They discuss things with Zach, but Zach doesn't make that decision.
Okay.
He has preferences, and they are very good about trying to ferret out what those preferences are.
Yeah, because that's what, right? I was basically talking about, the extra days rest for him.
And they'd like to try to do that with everybody if they can,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't always work out like that. Sometimes you have to just pitch on the day they tell you to pitch. So that's, you know, like, he's getting a week off, basically, because of where they inserted Ranger. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, now you got Ranger pitching Sunday and an off day Monday, and so he doesn't go again until Tuesday. That's probably not his favorite thing, but that's the way they felt like it lined up the best and the way they wanted to do it. So,
gotcha.
So I don't think it's really like, well, we got to get clearance from Zach. I don't think it's anything like that.
Gotcha.
Scott, we've had a lot of different conversations so far this year about things that need to be better, whether it be the bullpen or obviously health now with all the starters and try to figure this out, and the leadoff spot and Trey Turner, and whether it be his offense or his defense. Scott, one thing that really, I don't think it's come up a lot, it came up on our show to start today, is Bryce Harper's performance so far this year. And by his standards, it's just well below what we usually see. His batting average in the 230s, his OPS under 800. Scott, what are you noticing? I mean, I feel like he's swinging and missing more, but when he hits it, I know you guys referenced the other night, the exit velocities are still good. He's still hitting the ball hard. Do you think this is just a slump, something more? What are you noticing with Bryce and his performance so far this season?
I think it's a little bit of a slump. I do think Bryce is seeing more breaking balls than he's probably ever seen in his life. And he will have to go through the process. I think he's trying to go through the process of making that adjustment. But it, to me, he looks like his timing is off. It looks like he's, you know, kind of jumping at things at the plate a little bit. I agree with you that if they're going to go where they want to go, they're going to need Bryce Harper to be Bryce Harper and match up to the back of his baseball card. He's not the only one we can say that about, but the reality is that this team is built around those guys. And we can talk all we want about, you know, we've been down this road the last few years. You, the three of us talking about different players. This team is going to go because the superstars are going, because the superstars are playing like they should and producing like they should. Some of the stuff on the margins helps. It's nice. It's good. And you want to improve, and it makes you, you know, maybe tick up a couple of wins. But if you really want to get where you want to go, you need the superstars to come through.
Yeah, so, there's no doubt about that. Scott, yeah. before we let you go, we know this weekend you're going to be doing an event with the Philadelphia Youth Sports Collaborative. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, yeah, I'm actually here right now. It's going on in the background. They're kicking off their 10-year anniversary. They're having their 24-hour day of giving today. And if you don't know what PYSC is, I encourage you to go to pysc.org. They do amazing work, and they help fund a lot of grassroots youth sports programs across the city of Philadelphia to make sure there's to make sure there's equity in sports, and make sure that kids at every you know, economic level, and in, like I said, every zip code of Philadelphia has access to youth sports, some kind of sport, basketball, baseball, football, hockey, you name it, you know, equestrian, whatever it is, they're out there trying to help fund those things. So go to pysc.org, and if you can donate, we would certainly appreciate it.
Great stuff, Scott. We appreciate you hopping on, and we'll check out the website, and glad you got to tell us about that. Scott, have a great day, and we'll be listening tonight. Big series against the Diamondbacks.
Appreciate you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
And Hugh, I wasn't saying anything about you being on the couch. Okay?
Oh, no, no, Scott.
He's
no,
just
Scott.
Sensitive because we're going
not,
after
I'm
him.
I'm not
here.
Sensitive. I appreciate that because I think people need to hear that sometime because that's a different perspective.
Yeah, it is. No, it's important.
That's a perspective from somebody that's there like every day. So I appreciate that. I do.
All right. Have a good weekend, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds
you
great.
As well.
There we go. Scott Fransky there.